the OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
All right, you're welcome along. It's Thursday's Off the Ball. Nathan with you until 10 o'clock this evening. So a disappointing start for the Republic of Ireland's World Cup qualifying campaign in Belgrade last night. Beaten 3-2 by Serbia. We'll have lots of reaction on this evening's show. John Giles coming up at 7:30. And then David Myler will talk to us on the football show at 9 o'clock. Between 8 and 9, we'll hear from Niamh Briggs. She'll be chatting about Ireland's Lions hopefuls. And we're at the eve of Daffodil Day. We'll have a special panel on living well beyond cancer with Tony Ward, Mary Cullen and Noel McGrath. Obviously, the Daffodil Day sellers won't be out there, so you can get onto cancer.ie and make your usual donation there. 53106 is the text number. At Off the Ball on Twitter if you want to get in touch. Joe Malloy is with us. Evening.
Evening, hello.
Caught you by surprise there, did we?
No.
Richie McCormack there as well. That's a cheery looking bunch evening, this evening. Yes. Bloody hell, lads. Give me something here. Come on. You still down from last
with,
night?
What are you trying to deal with? Night.
Yeah. Was it difficult?
It's interesting, isn't it? It's like it's not a straightforward picture. I was trying to organize my thoughts because I figured it was the first thing you would ask about. Like, I was really pleased Stephen Kenny stuck to his principles, and I liked the team he picked, and I thought, given the attacking options we had, he gave us the best chance possible to score goals. So I thought in the main the formation worked. I thought Coleman was exceptional, like so good. He was just, you could tell he was organizing things back there and had some great moments. I thought Darragh O'Shea had lots of great moments as well for a young fella, even though obviously he caught out for the first goal in particular. It allowed Doherty, who didn't, by the way, have one of his better games. I still think Doherty's out of form, but it allowed Doherty and Stevens to get forward. Like, you think even of our first goal away from home, Nathan, we have four players in the box. How often did that happen down the years, over the last couple of years? When Brown gives it to Stevens, I think it says a lot that Stevens' instinct now is to get into the box after he gives the ball to Callum Robinson. You know, Stevens gets that ball. He knows he's got the three behind him. So when he pushes it on to Callum Robinson, he gets in the box himself. I thought that's brilliant, and that's where we need to get to. If we're going to hurt teams, like, football is changing. You have to score goals. You have to play attacking football. I think the reasons we lost are that primarily Serbia have better players than us. I think we got tired. I think Connolly, you know, he pulled up a cramp after an hour. I thought Malumbi was wrecked. They're young players. They're not playing much club football. That shows. And I thought Gary Breen made an excellent point this morning with Jaron Owen when he said that we start games very well and our shape looks really good. But what happens after a while is that really top players start to figure out where the space is, you know. And as games go on, we have to learn as a group to self-police and not wait for Stephen Kenny to make all the changes and to spot where certain pockets of space are opening up and to adjust accordingly. And Gary Breen said certain players maybe need to get into defensive positions a bit quicker because they're playing a championship level, not against a Tadic, and therefore you have to be in place a bit more early. So I think that coupled with tiredness.
It's a difficult thing to do as well when your senior player between your midfield and your attack is Alan Brown, who's a 25-year-old with 12 caps.
Yeah, it is. It was Brown that Breen was talking about in that instance while still being complimentary of Brown's overall performance. So I think there was a huge number of positives. You can't, before anyone texts in to give out to us, because I know we have a reputation now for being very much on Kenny's side and not criticising him at all. You can't say everything was perfect. It is still no wins, and we're now on the back foot in this group. Where I'd probably disagree with Stephen Kenny, who, again, I thought picked the right team and they looked well-drilled, so he's clearly getting lots of good messages across to him, to them, rather. Where I would probably disagree with Stephen Kenny is, initially afterwards, he said that he couldn't believe Serbia had scored three, you know? And I look at the chances they created. I think 3-2 is kind to us in many ways. Like, I think of the Vlahovic free header. What a player he is, by the way. Brilliant player. Vlahovic had a free header from a corner.
Shot at the near post.
I think of the ball, which just was going wide, and I think it was Vlahovic again, was inches from getting a toe to it. I think of the brilliant interplay down our left-hand side in the first half, and you might remember the ball was played back to Lukic on the edge of the area, and he had, you know, 8 yards in front of him, and he's on the edge of the area, and he skied it. He tried to open up his body, and he skied it.
Enough of Malloy. I'm sick of listening to him. Get rid. Joe has just dropped off temporarily. You still there, Richie?
Barely, yeah.
Jeez, he was going off on one there, wasn't he? It's my show on a Thursday. He gets Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Come on. Don't bring him back.
If Joe doesn't get his 20-minute opening monologue in, like Jay Leno or Conan O'Brien, he's kind of missing out.
Oh, apparently he's back. Great guy. Love him. We're just really enjoying that. That was great stuff.
Wow. Can I finish my point?
Finish your point. They had a lot of chances, Joe.
Yeah, when you list them out, you know, the Vlahovic free header, remember the ball that was just sliding wide of the post and he was inches away from getting his foot to it. I think they had brilliant interplay on the edge of the Ireland left-hand side at one point, and it resulted in Lukic on the edge of the area, and the ball was given to him. He was like on the penalty spot practically, maybe the 18-yard line, and just skied it high and right. He was trying to place it too much. Like, that was an unbelievable chance. In the first half, Travers made a really good save. Remember that slide rule pass? And in fairness to Travers, he was on his near post. Tadic had a good moment in the first half. It was like a cross-come shot. And then their three goals were just quality. Like, I think they were just such quality goals. That's the level. You know, that's a slightly higher ceiling than we're capable of. And I thought the Mitrovic finish, it was, that goal is for me still more about the Mitrovic finish. Travers being off his line. And as well, Nathan, you would have picked up on this as well in commentary. It's three players, including Mitrovic, one touch each. Bang, 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 Mitrovic chip it in before defence can react. It was a brilliant goal. But therefore, I disagree slightly when Stephen Kenny said, you know, I don't know how they scored three goals tonight. I thought they were worthy winners. I thought 3-4-1 might have been a fairer reflection on the gap between the teams. But
I think Ireland had more chances than, not more than Serbia, but had chances as well, particularly in that 15 minutes after half time. There was that ball into the near post that Aaron Connolly didn't get there, where Pavlovic got back to cover. There were another couple of, granted, they were half chances and Serbia's chances were better. I don't think Ireland deserved to win the game, but it was watchable. Very similar to the Slovakia game. It felt like watching a normal, entertaining game of football where Ireland were pretty well organised. When they got opportunities to get on the ball, they tried to keep hold of possession. We know they're with a third-choice keeper. We know that they don't have the quality of attacker that Serbia have. But it felt like watching a modern football team, and people aren't stupid, they watch a lot of football now. They know that most teams across Europe, club level, international level, like to play a bit of ball, like to attack and to entertain. It's not anywhere near the finished article, and with that group it may never get to be what Stephen Kenny wants to be, the finished article. But to say that, which, and I think Vinnie Perth made the point this morning, it's not 50-50. I think, you know, 75-25. Most people feel that Stephen Kenny is making a bit of progress. And like, that looked like a Stephen Kenny side last night. That looked a world away from a Mick McCarthy team or a Martin O'Neill team. I'm not saying it's better, but it did look like a totally different style of football that they were trying to play. But results are what matter. And while Stephen Kenny is, you know, under a little bit of pressure, Luxembourg, regardless of the improvements they've made, Richie, Luxembourg are always going to be Luxembourg, and Ireland will always expect to beat them.
Yeah, Luxembourg have beaten the likes of Cyprus, though, in the last 12 to 18 months, so I wouldn't necessarily be viewing this as the gimme, or two gimmies, essentially, that a lot of people will be looking at. I've had a bit of trepidation about them, regardless of the results going into this group. But like you say, there is a definite improvement. I tweeted after the match, like, the result isn't kind. But ultimately, if you can't see the progress that's being made in a really limited amount of time that Stephen Kenny has to work with the players, then I kind of have sympathy for you, because like, there is a sea change being undertaken with that side. And I almost feel like Kenny's going to be a martyr for whatever manager comes along in 3 or 4 years' time to look after that side, because when he does depart, whenever that is, they'll be in a better place, because they are able to play football now. They're not playing with their backs against the wall for 85 minutes, depending on a superhero performance from a goalkeeper or a centre half, like we got used to under Trapattoni or under Martin O'Neill. There is a sense that we're building towards something that, if we do happen to qualify for a tournament, that we won't be embarrassed like we were roundly in 2012, that we won't eke through like we did in 2016. And people have to remember, when they talk about in terms of qualifying for tournaments, Ireland only ever won a group once, and that was qualifying for Euro 88 when we had a five-team group. Ironically enough, Luxembourg were in that too. But we've only ever won a group once. by dint of the fact of the way qualification worked previously, you used to be able to sail through to a World Cup or European Championships by finishing second in your group. That doesn't happen anymore. Even finishing second in your group means you have to go through a series of playoffs and you mightn't get through. So we have to look at these things in real terms, that a second or third place finish in a group is actually something of an achievement in these circumstances when there's a whole load of raised boats around us in the water. People commenting last night as well, saying like Mitrovic can't even get in the Fulham side and he's coming off the bench and we're conceding those goals to him. Mitrovic has 38 goals at international level. We would snap everybody's mother's arm off in the office to have somebody like that
in our
squad.
Well, he's a peculiar player because he probably isn't agile enough for the Premier League, but he has shown in the Championship he is as good as you will get as a Championship player. And because international football is that bit slower, actually, it suits him down to the ground. And like that touch, Mark Travers, he's in no man's land. But actually, okay, maybe it makes the job more difficult for Mitrovic if he's positioned correctly. But even if he was positioned correctly and Mitrovic got that connection, he probably ain't saving it.
Yeah, still, this actually, the physics of scoring that goal is something to be applauded, regardless of whether Travers is out of position or not. But like I said, we'd kill to have a Mitrovic or a Kostic or a Milinkovic-Savic or a Luka Jovic.
Somebody
come
with
off
their name
the
ending
like
in H might
night.
Be a start.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like the point remains, like these are guys who cost an awful lot of money on the market in terms of transfers, and we don't have that coming off the bench. But we are bringing through a younger class of player than we've had. There is a changing of the guard in terms of the squad that Stephen Kenny has available to him and the players that he wants to rely upon in the years to come. And like I said, my original point, he doesn't have that much time to work with the players. Like, I recall going to see an Ireland training session. Do you remember that goal, that game that we played against Portugal? It was in 95 when there was an OG down at the Havelock Square end, I think it was, and John Aldridge gets up in Fernando Couto's face and all that kind of stuff. I remember going to see that training session on a Sunday. On a Sunday afternoon, they're doing a full-on training session. They would have full training sessions Monday and Tuesday after that. They're more than likely together on the Friday before that too, building up for one game. They don't get that now. They get one or two sessions in. It's something that Dragan Stojkovic even complained of going into the match last night. You get one or two sessions, three if you're lucky, and then you have to hope for the best beyond that. So given what he's had to work with, given the time frames that he's had to work within, given the COVID profile of the squad going back into late last year and the injuries that he's had to deal with as well, he's doing okay. There is progress. The results will come. People just need to, for the love of God, calm down.
Yeah, I think it's just a bit of it's a vocal minority. It's sort of like Trump-Biden in America at this stage, Joe. It's just got incredibly extreme where the, shall we call them the Trump side? You promised us that Stephen Kenny would bring us Manchester City-style, dominant, possession-based football that scored lots of goals. It was like, no, I just thought it might be actually, you know, good to watch for a while and maybe a bit more entertaining and a bit more progressive. And it has been that so far. And, you know, you can always go back. You can always go back to, which may well happen, the next manager may well be that more old school style manager, because that's probably all the Republic of Ireland can afford. But it didn't get us with Martin O'Neill with all his experience to the World Cup in 2018. Giovanni Trapattoni with all his success didn't get us to two World Cup finals. And throughout that, Irish football lost an awful lot of people who spent money at the Aviva Stadium and said, no, I don't like this, to 18 months ago been in a situation where you literally couldn't give away a ticket for a Republic of Ireland match. So it's not going to be straightforward. And if the Republic of Ireland can't win on Saturday night, well, the pressure is going to be absolutely immense. It is always going to be a results-based business, but you cannot watch that last night and not think, you know what, this is a step in the right direction.
Mm, I agree with that. I think most people watching thought that. I mean, obviously there's going to be a loud minority. I think most would have looked at it and said, given the players we have, they went about their business in a very committed way. There was still lots of grit and resilience and those old school Irish traditions there. And there was an effort to try and play some decent football. And in several instances, they played some really good football. So, you know,
grit and resilience gets a bad old name,
bang
doesn't it?
The table and scream about that.
Like grit and resilience.
So.
Every great team is grit and resilience.
Again,
you're gone. No, you're still talking. You just can't hear us, which is even worse. Get rid of him. We're sick of Malloy dominating this. Lots of text coming in. Does Coleman look so good because he looks so assured on the ball and in his movement in comparison to the other guys we have? There's a bit of that, but I think actually he just played bloody well last night. He played like a man with a chip on his shoulder who hasn't played for Ireland in a long time. You're talking nonsense. The football is not any better. Stop waxing lyrical about an average Serbian side. Shows where your expectations are.
Yeah, it does show where our expectations are, because like man for man, that Serbia side is better than us. There's no escaping that. But for an hour last night, we stood toe to toe with them and actually looked like we could cause them a bit of trouble. Like, our expectations are pretty real, I think, among the three of us, especially here. But that Serbia side is better than us on a man-for-man basis. And I don't think anybody should be under any illusions of that. And the football is, like, objectively better than anything we've seen in the past decade under any Ireland manager.
I've hated watching Ireland for years and years until last night. Last night I cared because of the way they played. I actually don't mind them losing if they try to play football. Serbia were rattled until they woke up and decided that we were a handful. I still do mind losing. I won't lie, I was losing everybody to run of myself in the first half an hour thinking, you know what, if Ireland could win this, it's such a setback for Serbia. There's no way they're getting out of this. But anyways, it is a massive setback. And no matter what happened during this group, Ireland at some stage were probably going to have to beat Serbia or Portugal at some stage. And that now is definitely the case. The news round here on Off the Ball and News Talk is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. Where are you starting, Richie?
We'll start with Belgrade last night. Former Republic of Ireland defender Gary Breen feels the current squad are correct in believing good results aren't far away. The World Cup qualifying campaign began with that 3-2 defeat away to Serbia last night. Luxembourg visit the Aviva on Saturday for what is a must-win game in terms of the group and also for Stephen Kenny's tenure in charge. But speaking on this morning's OTBAM, Breen is happy to see the manager sticking by his beliefs.
I want to be supportive of this manager. And I prior to the game, Jay, I was saying, I asked Vinnie Purf when I was speaking to him the other day with Joe, what is Stephen Kenny going to do now? Because there was a suggestion that he's got to go more pragmatic because of the fact that he's got to get through these troubled waters, navigate a path through there and not be like looking to play football in around his own box with this idealistic philosophy, whatever, because it's not realistic. So I asked him the question, would he stay true to his beliefs? And he did. I felt he did last night. And I was delighted with that because I think if you suddenly start throwing out your beliefs, those players straight away go, hold on a minute. Well, if you don't believe it, how are we going to believe it? And I think there was certainly murmurings of discontent within the supporters, but it can't be within the changing room. And I felt last night that they believed in what they were doing. I believe that they do feel as a group, the players, that they're on the cusp of something. And I've been in this situation before, Jer, where you think, you know, something's about to happen. Now, the results might totally dismiss that, where you're thinking, well, that don't make sense. But you feel something is about to happen. Now, they're talking about that their confidence is high. And we can say, well, listen, on the back of 8 games without a win prior to this one, how can it be? But it can be, because I think they do believe in what they're trying to achieve. But they've got to start winning games.
Yeah, some really good analysis from Gary Breen this morning and from Vinnie Purth as well, who also spoke very passionately about the noise that is going on around Stephen Kenny at the moment. So you can listen back to that on the OTB Sports app. Joe is back with, he just won't give up. Give me my airtime. That was the case as well on Tuesday when David Livingston, formerly the face of Sky Sports golf coverage, he joined us on Golf Weekly. Joe, we just couldn't let him on. It was going to be too smooth for everybody. So it was just myself, Fionn, and Peter. I'm going to bring you a little clip of it. Here's David Livingston talking about his old friend, Butch Harmon.
Butch, he never wants to grow old. I mean, there he is, 78, but when I say he acts like a teenager, I mean he really does. And he told me that the reason he kept on going to the range week in, week out, was to stay, not so much relevant, but stay young. Because when he was around Ricky Fowler or Rory McIlroy or or even Mickelson, I mean, he's no kid, but he loved the energy of young people. And I've never known anyone like Butch. He knows every buzzword, every phrase that's going around, not just in golf, but, you know, because he watches all sport. But he even knows all the stuff from reality TV and all that. I don't know where he gets it all, but he just, you know, and I think this is a guy who's lived in, I'm trying to think, probably about a dozen states in America. I mean, he's lived all over the place and he can do any accent. And, you know, he was brought up in, you know, in the caddy shack. So he knows all the caddy language. He knows it. I mean, he can trash talk with anyone. And I think that's what that was no good. I wasn't quick enough of thought or tongue to compete in that area. So I was in a safe area, but Butch brought all that into the studio. You would have got that. You know, the minute he would have used words that the young players were using and they all recognize. And I don't think he was playing a part. It was just his natural way of doing it. So he had an energy that obviously viewers picked up on, and he was in touch with life. That's for sure.
Yeah, David Livingston there, the very recognisable voice of David Livingston, waxing lyric about his old friend Butch Harmon. You can get the full interview on otbsports.com/golfweekly. Just sign up for the Patreon. There's another podcast today, Joe. Rory McIlroy again. How long do you do?
We kept the Rory talk to a decent amount without going overboard. Okay. Yeah. I must listen back to David Livingston. I couldn't make it. We had Danny Murphy on, who was great. Equally brilliant, wasn't he? Mm. He's a smart cookie. Danny Murphy, great communicator. So, but I must listen back to David. I hear it was very good, very smooth.
Very smooth, very smooth. So that's up online now. Richie, there is football on tonight.
Yeah, Northern Ireland are in Parma for their opening Group C game away to Italy this evening. Scotland's Group F campaign begins at home to Austria, while England take on San Marino at Wembley. That's in one of three Group I games. Rory McIlroy's second group game at the WGC match play is underway. He's 2-up through his first two holes with Lanto Griffin. That follows yesterday's heavy defeat to Ian Poulter. Shane Lowry is also in need of a win this evening. He goes out at 8 p.m. taking on John Rahm. Former Republic of Ireland midfielder Alan McLaughlin has revealed he's been diagnosed with cancer. The veteran of two World Cups underwent an operation last month to remove a tumour from his vertebrae. McLaughlin was initially diagnosed with renal cancer in 2012, which later spread to his chest and to his lungs. It was his goal at Windsor Park in 1993, of course, that secured Ireland a place at the World Cup in the United States.
Yeah, it's very sad news. Worked a lot with Alan through the years, covering Premier League matches. Lovely man, very quiet man. A reluctant hero in some stage when you would bring back what he did at Windsor Park in 1993, and has gone through a very, very tough time of it over the last number of years, and is in for a heck of a battle now as well. And I think we all wish him the very, very best.
Yeah, absolutely. You read his statement today and... so tough, absolutely horrific. And as you said, he's been on the show many times down the years, always a gent. So you can only wish him well. Not easy at all.
What else he offers, Richie, before we wrap?
League of Nations continuing at Dundalk. They've signed South Korean winger Han Jung-woo. The 22-year-old was a free agent following his January release by Suwon. Han trained with his new teammates this morning and is available for tomorrow night's visit of Finn Harps to Oriel Park. Dundalk sporting director Jim Magilton believes the signing of Han will open up new opportunities for the club and indeed the league in Southeast Asia.
All right, I think that is pretty much us done. Richie, thank you as always.
Cheers, lads.
Joe, it was interrupted, to put it mildly, but here, listen.
Apologies.
Check that Wi-Fi. I don't know who you're. Did you get a discount deal with them out the road? I'd have a word. I'd have a word when you're in there tomorrow night for the old Six Nations. Sort it out, lads. You're letting us down. He's got nothing to say on
Couldn't
that.
Couldn't possibly comment.
Nothing to say on that.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette. Made of what matters.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.